You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
Can you think of another story?
Well, there's two of them. One of them involves the greeters that you see in Walmart, but I'll hold that one back. Here's one specifically on products, and the product is bird cages. Bird cages in Walmart in the pet departments have a tendency to sit on shelves because the bird cages come in boxes. Well, there was an associate in a store who came up with the idea of taking them out of the boxes that they come in and building them and putting them out merchandise so that the customers can pick them up already built and purchase them and just take them home and put them up. And what this particular associate did is he got a tape recorder that had the sound of birds tweeting, and he played it in the cage, and he put a little stuffed bird in this particular cage in the place where he was merchandising. He couldn't use a real bird, and customers would come over and look at the cages, and because of the combination of the visual and the way that he had merchandised and the sound, he sold more bird cages than anybody else had ever sold. And so from that point on, they figured out they needed to build the bird cages if they wanted to sell them. They don't sell in boxes.
Right, no one wants to build it.
The same thing with bicycles. Bicycles don't sell if they're in a box. People want to buy the bike built. In this particular example, it was proven that they could sell the heck out of these bird cages, took it back to the Saturday morning meeting, and it was implemented immediately that in that particular department, build your bird cages and have them available for the customers to take already built.
Wow, that's a great story.
Did it work?
Let's talk about retail payment.
Well, you know, retailtainment is a combination word of retail and entertainment. And it's another example of how Sam Walton was doing everything he possibly could to keep the shopping experience interesting and exciting for customers. A great example of retailtainment might be when a Harry Potter video came out recently. The store announced that it was going to have a special promotion on Harry Potter videos, and it offered to children coloring books that were for free, a pair of glasses that were Harry Potter glasses, and a magic wand, and created a coloring contest in the store that children could actually color these pictures in of Harry Potter and have them displayed and have the possibility of winning prizes for their Harry Potter cartoon work and coloring work. It's a way to get people into the store because obviously if children are going to come to the store for the Harry Potter promotion, they have to, so to speak, bring their parents. And so it gets the parents back in the store to shop more often. They do similar things in other areas of the store. For example, in the sporting goods area, they might have one of the tournament champions from Bassmasters from the fishing tournaments, and they might be in the back talking about different kinds of fishing strategies with fishermen who will come in to meet them and to get an autographed picture and learn more about how to catch fish. And retailtainment is a program designed to create excitement in the store and get customers to come in over and over again for a fun and exciting retail experience.
What's another story?
Outside of New Orleans, one of the stores put a greeter in the front of the store.
So was this the first time greeters were used?
The first time greeters were ever used. What happened was Mr. Sam was down in Louisiana visiting stores, and he walked into the store, and there was a gentleman at the door with the Walmart smock on greeting him. And the greeter didn't know who he was, didn't know it was Sam Walton, and welcomed him to the store and offered him a shopping cart. Well, Mr. Sam was taken by this and went to the store manager and said, "What's the story on the associate up here at the front door?" The store manager said, "Well, you know what? We're having a problem with theft, what they call in retail term shrinkage. And so what we did is we came up with a creative way to watch the door. And so what we did is we put this person up there to welcome people when they come in, but to keep an eye on merchandise going out." And so the interesting story behind the story is the greeter is as much a security person as they are a greeter. And so what Sam Walton did is he went back, and that next Saturday morning, without committee discussion, he said, "Here's what I saw down in Louisiana. I want a greeter at the front door of every store that we own 24/7, 365. And that's how it was implemented based on one example in one store where someone came up with this creative idea. And there's no telling what that's done for customer relations as well as for the reduction in retail theft.
That's excellent, because anyone listening to this goes into the Walmart and sees the greeter, and I never considered that it had anything to do with loss prevention. I always looked at it as just great customer service and a positive thing.
Yeah, the funny story I tell is if you ever want to test that theory is walk in with a bag to return something to the service desk, and that greeter will stop greeting and will immediately focus on that bag coming in the door, and we're no longer in greeter mode, we're in secure the merchandise mode. And it works, and no one I've ever talked to has perceived that greeter to be in any form of loss prevention.
What are some examples of his thriftiness that he ran throughout the company?
Well, you know, when I first joined Walmart, I walked into my office the first day, and I noticed that I didn't have any office supplies in my office. I didn't have a chair. I didn't have a desk. I didn't have a clock. I didn't have any of the supplies that you need for an office. So I asked how I was going to outfit my office, and they said, go down to the vendor supply room where you'll find product samples that had been given to the company by the vendors. And I went through the vendor supply room, and I picked a chair and a desk and a clock and everything that I needed for my office right out of the vendor supply room. It wasn't intended for purposes of give us some samples so we can outfit the office. They had the samples sitting there in the supply room, so they just made use of them in the office. I'll tell you another great example of the thriftiness of Sam Walton in Walmart was the employees in my department in the home office brought their office supplies to outfit their desks, like staplers, pens, scissors, paper, paper clips, whatever they needed for their office, they brought it from home out of their home supplies. And when I asked them why they would do that, they told me that it was their belief that this was their contribution to lowering the expenses of the company to help to drive their own profit sharing. The stories of people at Walmart who were in truck driver jobs or office clerical positions or store positions who were multimillionaires resulted from their own profit sharing and the growth of the company's stock. And that's what they believe. This was their contribution to lowering costs.
I wonder what it's like today in the home office. Do you think these practices are still implemented?
I do. I just think that the culture is so strong. And the interesting thing about that example is it's not a management mandate. This was a grassroots effort driven by the rank and file hourly paid associates who were doing what they could to lower expenses for the company. And clearly it wasn't something directed by the company leadership. I can tell you when I experienced this phenomenon, I found myself outfitting my own office with the same kinds of supplies. I brought in pens and pencils and paper clips and post-it notes and whatever I needed for my office desk from my home. That's a very strange example, but that's how far the Walmart army of associates is willing to go to lower the expenses of the company.
Can you give the listener an idea of just the sheer volume of Walmart and how big of a company it is?
Let me share some of the big stats with you. The sales for Walmart in 2005 eclipsed $300 billion of sales. And if the current sales trends continue as is, in the next 5 years, Walmart will be at $500 billion of sales.
In the next 5 years?
In the next 5 years. And it's likely that if sales trends continue for 10 years to 12 years, Walmart could be the first trillion-dollar company with a T. That's the opportunity ahead of Walmart. If that were to happen, if you go out to 2016 to 2020 and they're a $1 trillion company in annual sales, they will be gathering in one of seven retail dollars spent on the planet Earth. And the opportunities are just endless for the company. Walmart is only in 14 countries right now, and many of their largest competitors are in 30 to 35 to 40 countries. Walmart has 170 million customers crossing their thresholds every week of the year. This year it's anticipated in 2006 that they are going to open more than a store a day somewhere in the world. The estimation is somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 stores will be opened around the world this year. Right now, Walmart has about 1.7 million employees, making them the largest employer in the world. They have the largest IT systems, second only to the U.S. government. The Pentagon operations have the largest computers in the world. Walmart's the second largest.
Are all those computers in Bentonville?
Not all the computers are in Bentonville. The majority of the mainframe centralized computers are in Bentonville. They have operations centers primarily because of the inability to attract people to fill the jobs in Bentonville. They set up a center, and I believe it's in Kansas City and one in Dallas also. They've spread it out a little bit.
Look, I want to get my product into Walmart. Do I have a chance? Is there a chance for a little guy like me, if I had the money, to get my product into Walmart and become rich?
There's always a chance to get your products into Walmart because of the fact that if you have a unique product that isn't in market right now, you can take it to Walmart the problem is that Walmart can be a dream come true for that small entrepreneurial type manufacturer, or it can be your biggest nightmare. And the reason for that is many small companies don't have the wherewithal to back up the product with manufacturing and distribution. When you consider the fact that Walmart has 6,700 stores around the world today and growing, as I said, at the end of this year they'll have over 7,000 stores, the small manufacturer can supply a small number of stores, but when put in the position to supply, just take the U.S. base of 3,700 stores, they have to invest tremendous amounts of money in manufacturing and distribution capabilities that they don't have today in the hopes that their product will be successful long term. If those products aren't successful and get thrown out of Walmart, they get saddled with all this manufacturing logistics facility that they have invested in with no market to put their products.
Do you think that's frustrating for Walmart, or does Walmart have an endless opportunity to get products in? Because Walmart's not getting into the manufacturing of products, or maybe they are.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that Walmart has somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,600 private label products in a supercenter.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. One of the biggest growing businesses is private label product. And one of the things that they do is there are a number of good reasons to have private label product. It creates additional value for customers. It creates a little bit of back pressure on branded manufacturers. Walmart offers soft drinks that are private label Walmart brands that go up against Coca-Cola and Pepsi. They offer a private label Sudafed. They offer a private label cooking spray that's similar to Pam to compete with the Pam product. And they do that specifically to keep the branded products honest in negotiations, because they offer a private label product is better value, there's no doubt about it, and probably comparable to better quality than what are offered by the branded manufacturer.
So will they carry both the brand manufacturer and the private label at the same time?
Yes, and they'll have them on the shelf next to each other. For example, if you go and look at the private label Sudafed type product that's offered in a Walmart and compare it, the actual chemistry of the product is almost exactly the same, but the price of the product is significantly lower, and the quality of the manufacturing and all of the research and development that's gone into it is equal to or better than what the branded manufacturers put into it.
You're listening to Michael Stenoff, hardtofindseminars.com. So what do I need to know? What's the reality check that you're going to recommend me to really be aware of before I even consider flying out to show my product to a buyer at Walmart?
I think that the bottom line is the price. The whole relationship with the retailers has sort of flipped from what it was in the old days, where the supplier would come in and dictate the terms to the retailer. Today, Walmart's dictating the terms to the supplier. And so when they come in with a product and they have a price point in mind, first of all, you better have the best price that you can possibly offer Walmart on the table. They don't like the idea of sitting there and playing games with pricing.
So you got to come in with your absolute best price.
You have to have a sharp pencil, and you got to give them the best price the first time. If you're in a competitive market where there's another supplier of the same product, they're probably going to be walking in right behind you so that they can do a comparison of your product versus your competitors. If I were coming in to make a sale to Walmart, I would come in with the best price the first time. And you can't offer the Walmart buyers any kind of special consideration in terms of free samples, a baseball cap, taking them out to dinner, on a trip to see your manufacturing facilities in San Diego. When you make a sale to a Walmart buyer, everything is based on total integrity and total honesty. And for some suppliers, that's a foreign concept. In the marketplace, historically, there were all kinds of under-the-table deals that were struck with buyers, and that's not the case at Walmart. You can't give a Walmart buyer a baseball cap with your company logo on it. They won't accept it.
So what happens when you come in and try and do stuff like that?
You'll get thrown out. If you play any games with the Walmart buyers on your products, you will not get into their stores, and if you're currently in the stores, you'll get thrown out.
I understand that the buyers are only buyers in a certain category for a limited time. Is that true?
Yep, they move them around, and that's with intent. You may be working with one buyer today in a particular product line, and they'll move somebody in that has no related experience in buying your types of products. And that's also for that total integrity.
I've also heard on the other side that to get your product into some of these large mass merchandisers, some of the large national distributors are actually paying lobbyists to help lobby and get products into these merchandisers. But that's not the case with Walmart. There may always be an exception.
I would say this, that in dealing with the Walmart buyers, you have to deal with total integrity. Your bottom line price is your bottom line price, and you can't play any games with them. If you try to play games with the Walmart buyers, they don't have time to figure out your game. They got too much volume, too many products, too many stores. They don't have time to worry about whether you're dealing with them honestly or dishonestly. You need to deal straight up when you deal with Walmart's buyers and deal honestly at all times.
Have you ever sat in on a buying meeting where you see a vendor come in and present to a buyer?
Yes.
What kind of experience is that going to be like for me? Let's say I have a toaster, and what do? I fly in?
The night before, you would stay at one of the hotels that are probably down south of the Bentonville headquarters in Springdale. By the way, Bentonville is a dry county. So it's funny that most of the hotels that are in the area have been set up just across the county line in a town called Springdale, which is not a dry county. And that's where most of the vendors and suppliers end up staying. And the meetings start as early as 7 o'clock in the morning, and the lobby is full of suppliers coming in to meet with Walmart's buyers. And they have product samples with them to show to the buyers, which are then taken into the vendor rooms. And in the main hallway of the Bentonville headquarters are cubicle-type rooms with doors, but with glass in the doors and glass windows, so that the division merchandise managers are prowling the halls up and down the hallway, watching transactions as they're occurring from the hall as buyers are meeting with suppliers. And the meetings are typically not lengthy meetings. The product is brought in, there's a discussion of the product, price points, the margins, number of units. There might be discussions of capabilities, of the ability of that vendor to handle the distribution of the products on a regional basis or on a national basis or a global basis. And that's part of the consideration with making the decision to buy a certain product is, does that manufacturer have the capability to actually manufacture and supply it to the company in the time frame that Walmart needs it?
Okay. When they're in there, are they waiting for their buyer? Do they have an appointment and a time? Do they keep the vendors with their product samples waiting for hours until they see a buyer?
It could be. There's a large reception area in the front of the office, and it's a waiting room. And there's vendors of every type of product you can imagine sitting in there waiting to be called to come in. And you may be sitting across from one of your competitors who's there to present comparable product to yours. Or you may be sitting across from a competitor and not know it's your competitor. But there are people there selling every conceivable type of product, from the Fortune 500 Procter & Gamble type companies to mom-and-pop operations, and they're trying to sell product for the first time.
Now, what would you tell me when I come in before I present to the buyer? Is it going to benefit me to prepare and do my own research of the market, of what Walmart's selling in the same category, of their prices? Does that give me an edge in getting my product into Walmart?
Absolutely. I think you have to do research of all of Walmart's competitors. You have to have a PhD in your product. You have to really know what's going on in the marketplace with that product. What is it that makes your product unique? The fact that Kmart is carrying your product, or Target is carrying your product, or other retailers are carrying your product could be influential positively. It could be an influence negatively. You don't really know. But if you have a proven track record, that's helpful. So I think you need to come in prepared. You need to really know the market for your product and be able to educate the buyer. And the buyer is going to give you a fair chance to present your story, present your product, and to educate them on what the capabilities are of your product in the marketplace, because they're obviously not going to be experts in your particular product.
How long does Walmart make me wait for my money? I've heard stories that they float the money and you'll wait 6 months to a year before you're paid.
The terms that I typically hear are 60 days. From the time that your product is hitting that store, in 60 days, they'll be cutting a check to pay for the product that you put in. And the goal that Walmart has is for you to turn your merchandise in 60 days or less. They'd love it if you could turn your merchandise in 30 days.
Explain to me, what is a turn?
Well, inventory turn is, let's say that you have the approval to supply the company with product in the stores. And let's say that you can put 20 units in a store. You have that authority for that amount of space on the shelf that you can fit your 20 units. Well, what Walmart would like to see is that you're going to turn of your 20 original units at least 10 per month. So that by the end of 60 days, you turn 20 units in this example. It could be that with a product that you have, you might only be able to realistically turn 6 units in 60 days, 3 units a month. If that's the case, they don't want to force 12 units onto the shelf where you only end up at the end of 60 days with a 50% turn of units. They want to see 100% inventory turnover in 60 days. So what ends up happening in the vendor partnership that Walmart has with its suppliers, where they have the ability to replenish the shelves in an automated fashion? If I supply Walmart, I have the authority to manage my own inventory. But I don't feel an obligation in this partnership as a supplier to jam the shelves with merchandise that's just taking up space. What I do in that partnership is I try to turn merchandise in 60 days or less. And so what I'll do is, rather than jam the shelves with 12 units when I know I'm only going to turn 6 in 60 days, what I do is I put 6 units on the shelf, turn 3, and start replenishing at 3 units at a time. And what ends up happening is my inventory turns are then closer to 100% in 60 days, and Walmart isn't paying for inventory that is sitting on the shelf longer than 60 days, so they can make money on money. So in that partnership, they're successful and I'm successful. It's a true partnership. And we're all focused on the ultimate customer putting that product into their trunk of their car.
Can you give me, or the manufacturer, or anyone wanting to get inside Walmart, any kind of pricing strategies for my products? Can I compete on price with Walmart?
Well, can you compete with Walmart on price? If you are a small retailer that is trying to compete with Walmart on price, I would say you can't go toe-to-toe with Walmart on the exact same product on the same price, because you're going to lose money. Because the way Walmart buys, if you were buying for 3,000 stores, you can get a much lower price at purchase than someone that's buying for 10 stores.
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com.
And so what you have to do is you have to differentiate your product selection and have products at low price points, medium price points, and high price points within that category that Walmart doesn't offer. Everyone doesn't want the lowest price product at the lowest quality level. A lot of people want moderate price products at higher quality levels, or even high quality products at high prices. And so the key for others who are trying to compete, and if I was a manufacturer trying to coach other retailers to compete, what I would do is try to give them offerings that are not offered in the big box stores. Give them products that are at higher price points. And also offer services to support products. For example, if I sell vacuum cleaners, Walmart sells a couple of different vacuum cleaners, but they don't sell high-end vacuum cleaners, and they certainly don't service vacuum cleaners. They don't offer parts. They don't offer repairs. And they don't offer in-home service for products. So that's where the other retailer can compete, by offering products and services that are not offered by Walmart. I coach people all the time, don't try to go toe-to-toe with these big boxes on exactly the same products at the same prices, because you can't do it. You'll be selling products below your cost.
Tell me a little bit about the store to community program. I've learned a little bit about it, and it seems like if I'm a local merchant and I've got a hot product, that may give me a better chance of getting into Walmart. What's your philosophy on that?
If I understand your question correctly, if the store managers have the ability to buy on a local level to meet local tastes, for example, if you're in the city of Pittsburgh, where I live, and the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Pittsburgh Pirate baseball team or the Penguins are a big deal here, so if you have products that are focused on that particular type of item, that would be a very popular item in this marketplace. But if you can find products that meet the regional needs of Walmart that they can't supply out of Bentonville, you have a good chance of providing Walmart with those products, and they will put them in their stores. Especially if other regional retailers are offering those products, they want to also be competitive on those products.
How about the consumable products like baked bread and things like that? Are the Walmarts working regionally, or are they trying to do all that through Bentonville in national distribution?
They do buy from local bakeries, because obviously in a local marketplace, there are certain bakery items that are consumed in that market only. And so they'll buy from the same supplier and offer those products on their shelves. The unfortunate thing for other retailers is Walmart will buy in such quantities and offer them at such low prices, it makes it difficult for other retailers to compete on local products. But Walmart has its own bakery. Walmart has its own meat department. They have a full array of bakery items, everything from cakes to cupcakes to breads that they bake every day. And they are very competitive on quality and extremely competitive on price. And so many consumers find themselves purchasing the Walmart private label breads and cakes and cupcakes and cookies and things of that nature, but they don't buy the prepackaged meats that you see in the Walmart store. They continue to go to grocery stores that have butchers that cut meat. And so there are ways for the local retailer to compete. Even when the supercenter comes into town next door, they just have to be smart and, again, differentiate their offerings.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Why don't we talk about the ugly side of getting a product into Walmart? Obviously, getting a product into Walmart, if it's successful and they continue to buy from you, can make you a multimillionaire. But on the negative side, it could also ruin you. Can you share any story where you've seen that happen for a company?
There's a belief that supplying these big box retailers like Walmart is a dream come true, when in reality there are three types of suppliers to Walmart. There's those that make a tidy profit, there's those that break even, and there are those that lose money. And I have to tell you that because of the pressure on price, manufacturers are lucky if they're trading dollars at times because of the price pressure. You see people who come in there with the idea that selling large volumes of units through Walmart is automatically going to translate into big profitability, and that's not always the case. You have to really manage expenses on the manufacturing side and take the same approach that Walmart does. You know, everyday low prices and discount retailing is simply based on velocity. Low prices, large volumes of sales equals large profitability, but it's small profit per unit, and that's what a manufacturer experiences. So I think it is a bit of a dream to make big money as a small supplier to Walmart or a single product supplier to Walmart. I would be conservative on profitability if I were thinking about supplying these big boxes, because they're very smart about their purchases, and if the price points you're offering are too high, there's a likelihood that they may decide to knock your product off and manufacture it themselves.
So as far as integrity, that does happen, right?
It does happen, and there are manufacturers that were unable to supply the company, or there were manufacturers who refused to lower their quality so that they could lower their price. And there are manufacturers that have walked away from Walmart and said, I've decided I'm not going to try to supply you. I can't do it. And in those cases where those manufacturers have backed out, Walmart has found other manufacturers to come in that were willing to lower their quality and lower their price points, or they have actually gone out and manufactured those products private label.
So if you've got a commodity-type product that you have competition, there's a chance that you could get into Walmart, and then they could pressure you, and you could get knocked out, and they'll just go to either another supplier or manufacture it on their own, and then you're out of luck.
The pressure is always down. Walmart is always trying to figure out how little they can get for a product. And that's the paradigm shift that Walmart brought to discounting, is they're trying to figure out how little they can get for an item, where everyone else in the old days was trying to figure out how much they could get for a product. And so they are constantly putting pressure on the manufacturers to lower their costs, so they in turn can sell to Walmart at lower prices. So it is a constant battle to maintain a level of quality on product at low prices, and it's never ending. So it's not like you're guaranteed to stay in Walmart stores once you have made the initial sale. You've got to step up and keep your costs down and keep your prices down and continue to drive your costs down throughout your relationship with Walmart through creatively managing your own business. Walmart teaches its department managers the famous Walmart culture via the Walton Institute at the University of Arkansas.
What is the Walton Institute?
I guess other companies might call it their company university. This is Walmart's university, where they teach the Walmart culture to new department managers. It's a week-long program of cultural indoctrination that runs from Sunday through Saturday. It's actually 7 days of indoctrination, and almost 100% of the program is designed to teach Walmart managers their famous culture, because that's how important culture is to the success of the company. And one of the things that they teach in the Institute is their customer service standards. And one of the interesting practices is a program called Lanyap. And Lanyap is a Cajun term, and it means a little something extra. And as a good example, it's like the 13th donut in a baker's dozen. That would be an example of Lanyap. And what Walmart does is they try to create a shopping experience that keeps the shopping experience interesting for the customers by always offering a little something extra, something that's not expected by the customer, a too-good-to-be-true bargain. And as you walk the stores of Walmart, you'll notice that they have in the aisleways displays of products at too-good-to-be-true prices. You get two for the price of one. All sorts of examples of a little something extra, which is the program Sam Walton called Lanyap. It's a fascinating program of keeping the stores fresh and alive and giving the customers something new to look for every time they come into the stores. And that's why you see the Walmart customers just going up and down the aisles of the store, aisles they've been down many times before, looking for those too-good-to-be-true bargains.
Really? And this philosophy is strong and present and active in all the stores?
It's everywhere. You just never know what they're going to have that's going to be... It's not really a sales item. It's really an item that's designed to create very high velocity at a very low price. If you look at the end caps in a Walmart store, you're going to find products that the prices are really, really low. By merchandising products on an end cap, they try to increase the sales velocity to 3, 4, 5 times what it would normally be if it was on the normal shelf, and they have a really hot price. By increasing the velocity of sales, they overall increase the profitability of that item and create a very exciting shopping experience.
I could see that also gets people back to the store more often, just looking for that special deal.
That's right. It's just that feeling that it's just too good to be true. And what it does is it ends up driving impulse purchases. And that's really one of the neat things about Walmart is... If you sit at the door and you watch customers coming out of the Walmart store, very rarely do you see anyone walking out without a bag, without having made a purchase. And if you did that same exercise at, say, a shopping mall and watch customers shopping the stores in the mall, you'd often see customers walking into stores and walking out without making a purchase. That's not the case at Walmart. 90% of the customers that come out of the store have a bag.
I can also see that program offering items at such good prices that the shopper, maybe if they went in there and didn't have an intention of purchasing, it gets them into the buying habit at Walmart, almost like pre-programming for their next visit.
Right. The unfortunate thing about the low prices of Walmart, especially these items that we just talked about on the end caps, is that the competitors of Walmart that might sell those same products, let's say it was a tube of toothpaste, they can actually purchase those tubes of toothpaste for their own stores cheaper by buying them at Walmart than they can by buying them from their own third-party supplier because of Walmart's buying power. When you're buying for 3,800 stores and you're buying 1,000 tubes of toothpaste for each store, that's a lot of toothpaste, and you get a pretty good discount from the supplier or the manufacturer of that product that can't be touched by a third-party supplier. I was told by one retailer that he would actually go to Walmart to buy his motor oil because the price he could get for motor oil at Walmart was cheaper than what he could get directly from the oil company. It just puts tremendous pressure on these third-party suppliers to make money off the small retailers. Because if you think about it, they're not making a whole lot of money off the big discounters like Target and Walmart, so they've got to make their money somewhere, and come to find out they make it off third-party suppliers, which in turn is from the small retailers.
Yeah, as distribution becomes more sophisticated, you're seeing it already. Third-party suppliers and distributors are going to become a thing in the past.
At Walmart, it has pretty much become that. Even in the days when I worked there, Sam Walton was already moving down that path to directly work with manufacturers. The way that Walmart buys and the quantities that they're buying, they don't have a need to have a third party in between. It's actually a disruption to the supply chain. Products in Walmart are a commodity. Walmart is not a merchandise-driven company. It's a logistics, distribution and technology-driven company. And so the products that you see on the shelves don't have any particular intrinsic value to Walmart. All they are is a commodity. And what they're doing is they're turning products in retail stores into commodities across all segments. So customers are now viewing products more as commodities than they are as some sort of intrinsic value. And so it's driving prices down constantly across all segments of retail.
And commodities are sold on price.
That's right. And when you have supply and demand, that's why they can offer the low prices. They have a tremendous supply of products. They price them as low as they possibly can, and they make their profits on volume. And that is the discount retailing strategy of Sam Walton back from 1962.
What's the future for Walmart's competition, Target, and all these other competing warehouses, Costco and such?
There's a number of good competitors that will continue to be successful.
Who's second to Walmart?
Globally, it's Carrefour out of France. They're the French hypermarket retailer. A hypermarket is like a supercenter, and they are in 29 countries around the world. So they would be the number two globally. And then I think Tesco out of the UK is number three. And so Walmart probably has more global competition than they do domestic competition.
And how about domestically? Who's second to Walmart?
I would say that it's Target. And then you have companies like the Home Depots of the world, who are not direct competitors, but they are competitors. But let's say Target. Target has done a great job at differentiating themselves in the marketplace. The Target consumer is not the same consumer that goes to Walmart. They're more upscale and more upscale in their products. They have more fashion and more product design than Walmart has focused on historically. And what you're seeing is Walmart is trying to move in the direction of Target.
Oh, really?
They're trying to move in the direction of Costco.
For more interviews like this, please go to hardtofindseminars.com.
Both of them have a more upscale customer, and that customer has more money to spend, and Walmart wants that customer. So Target is successful. They will continue to be successful. Others who try to replicate the Walmart model with the same products will continue to have marginal to no success.
Can you think of one that we know about that tried to do that, Kmart?
Well, Kmart's a good example. Kmart cannot compete with Walmart, and we're beyond the beginning of the end. I don't understand how Kmart is still competing, and I don't know their current strategy, whether it'll work or not. But if you look around the country, since Walmart has gone into the grocery business, and this started in the early 90s, 26 regional grocers have gone out of business because they couldn't compete with Walmart on price. And there's more of that type of activity that's going to come in the future, because if you think about it this way, of the 100 top metropolitan markets in the United States, Walmart at the present time is only in 30 of the top 100 metro markets. It's hard to believe, but it's true. And those 100 metro markets are where 70 cents of every food dollar is spent in America. And so the opportunity for further growth and expansion is just unlimited still in the United States. But people tend to think that they're fully saturated, and that's not the case. So they will be moving into big markets, like take New York City. They're going to be in New York City, and they're going to be everywhere in New York City. They're working on Chicago right now, and these are big markets with big retail dollars at stake. And when they go in there, there are going to be other retailers that are going to close their doors as a result of Walmart competition because they can't compete. A grocer is too narrowly focused to compete with a supercenter. And there's specific reasons why they can't, and there's nothing that they can do to change their model. It's an old model of grocery retailing. The supercenter is sort of a paradigm shift in retail and makes the old model non-competitive.
So a grocery store is working on a 1% margin just about. What kind of margins can Walmart work on in their grocery market?
This is why a supercenter is so impossible to compete with for a grocery store. A supercenter, part of the store is devoted to groceries. Another part is devoted to general merchandise. The margins on the general merchandise side of a Walmart store are somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 9%.
Wow, that's big.
And then you blend that with, let's say that their margins on the grocery side are 1%. Well, the overall margins for the store are still somewhere in the neighborhood of 6 to 7%. Well, the grocery store now gets into a price competition on groceries with Walmart, and Walmart can drop its prices on the grocery side to be anything they want, and they still are supported by the 8 to 9% margins on the general merchandise.
And they're bringing in new customers into their stores for the groceries that they never would have had.
And they're coming in every week. And so what's happening is it's just absolutely devastating the traditional supermarkets and grocery stores. And Walmart is now even offering gasoline at their supercenters and their Sam's Clubs to try to get that customer to come to their stores every week.
Does Walmart give its store managers a lot of creative leeway as far as doing in-store promotions and trying new things?
Yeah, absolutely. Sam Walton believed that as vitally important as it is to have a planogram that's centralized in a buying department because they have to know where the products are going to go on the shelves once they're purchased.
What is a planogram?
Every retailer has a planogram where when they're making a buy for product, they have to know where that product's going to go on the shelf and what's going to come off the shelf to create the space for the new product coming in. And by centralizing the buying process in retail, it took away one of the more important areas of being a retail merchant, which is displaying products. And Sam Walton realized that one of the things that was really important to maintain in his Walmart stores was the feeling of being a merchant and understanding the connection of displaying products and seeing them go out the door in shopping bags. And he always wanted his associates, his employees, to think like retail merchants and understand the importance of displaying product and the impact it would have on what he called sales velocity and moving products through the store. And he always wanted to maintain that merchandising responsibility that was taken away by centralized buying. So the local managers have authority to buy to meet local tastes. And if there's products that are important in that regional area, they'll go out and shop the competitors every week. The department managers at Walmart go out and shop competitors and look for new products, new ideas that they can bring back. An interesting program at Walmart is their shopping cart comparison program. And the department managers will go out and they'll shop the competitors' departments and look for products that Walmart sells and make sure that they're pricing Walmart's products lower than the competitors in the area. I know of district managers who have gone into, say, a grocery store, and they filled up a shopping cart with items and actually purchase a shopping cart full of items at a competitive grocery store. They simply bring them back to the Walmart store, run them through the scanners at the register, and lay the tapes side by side. And that's called a shopping cart comparison. And when they do these shopping cart comparisons, if their prices are higher on certain items, they'll immediately go into the system and reduce prices on those items to make sure that they have equal or lower prices on every item.
They'll have to do that because they got to stick with their USP, lowest prices.
That's the Walmart strategy, and that's how they accomplish that, is through shopping cart comparison.
So if I go into my local Walmart store and I'm looking around, would it be safe to say that I am looking at a blueprint for merchandising of the best in the world, the way the end caps are set up, the product selection, everything about the merchandising in a Walmart store, I'm looking at the results of the highest technology testing, millions of dollars, field-tested, proven merchandising.
Yeah, I think that's a true statement. If you want to see great merchandising, great signage, great visuals, go to the shopping mall and you'll see some of the best at the retailers in the shopping mall. But if you go to the Walmart stores, you're going to see product displayed in large quantities with great signage on one thing and one thing only, prices. They're going to sell that everyday low price, and they're going to try to attract you with large displays of product.
You're listening to Michael Sinoff's Hard to Find Seminars. How long does a non-selling item that gets on the shelf stay on the shelf, like a loser? How long is Walmart going to give it a try before they know that it's not happening?
You know, it's going to be pretty obvious that a product isn't selling because of the fact that the technology in the Walmart stores provides daily reporting of movement of products, and they can create a list very easily of the poor selling items. I don't think a product that is not moving is going to last 60 days. It may not last 30 days. If it is clearly a dud and isn't moving, that's a lost opportunity for Walmart. They could put other products in that space that would sell, and it's dragging down the profitability of the store. The bottom line marketing is the bottom line.
You got a lot of media out there about Walmart. Some good, but a lot of it bad. They paint Walmart as the bad guy. They've got a target on their back. What's been your experience with how the media perceives Walmart, and how does Walmart deal with that?
Well, it's funny that when Walmart wasn't the largest retailer in the world, and depending on the price of gas today, they'll be the largest company in the world, or Exxon is the largest company, depending on the price of gas. But the media has placed a target on Walmart's back as the biggest company, and they're looking for negative stories. When you have 1.7 million employees, as Walmart does, and probably in the neighborhood of 70,000 managers around the world supporting the 7,000 stores that Walmart has around the world, you're going to have some bad eggs. Walmart hires out a society where you have good people and you've got some bad people. And if 1% of Walmart's managers, as an example, are bad eggs, and they have 75,000 managers, you're talking about a large number of people that could be problems. And so it's not something on the part of Walmart that is intended to be systemically negative, the things that they do. The examples you see in the media are typically someone who went off the reservation. It's an example in a localized area, and it's not a systemic issue. That's my experience.
Okay, very good. Well, why don't you tell us, Michael, about what you're doing and what are the plans for you, and tell us a little bit about your speaking and some of the things you do and your consulting. Tell us, what can you offer listeners who either want to learn more about Walmart, get their product into Walmart, have some consulting about giving them an edge and educating them about how to get their product into Walmart? What can you offer any of the listeners?
When I originally wrote my books, I wasn't like an embedded reporter planning to write books when I worked at Walmart, thinking when I leave I'll go ahead and write these great stories down and make lots of money. What happened was this. When I worked at Walmart, I learned some things that I'd never learned before. I was working for PepsiCo prior to Walmart and had learned the best practices of PepsiCo. I go to Walmart and I learn all of these practices of Sam Walton that are very different than other Fortune 500 companies. And I guess when I moved on from Walmart after Sam died, I went into two business turnarounds, and I found myself learning the knowledge I gained from Sam Walton in both of these turnarounds that were highly successful. So if I were coaching somebody from outside the company, I would say this. I wrote these books as a result of those turnaround experiences and using the Sam Walton and Walmart knowledge I'd gained. And if I were going to try to supply that giant company, I would educate myself on the culture of the company, the leadership of the company, and what makes Walmart different than everybody else. I have gone out and now I speak at conferences domestically and internationally, and the common question I get is, what makes Walmart Walmart? Why aren't we here talking about Target today, or Kmart, or Woolworths, or some other retailer? Why is it that Walmart is feared by competitors around the world? I answer that question the same way everywhere. It's because of Sam Walton. If you want to understand Walmart, you need to understand the teachings of Mr. Sam. And that's what I wrote about in these two books, and that's what I go around talking to companies about. And I talk to some of Walmart's current suppliers. I go into these companies, and I consult, and I also do speeches at their conferences to talk to their manufacturing teams, and I talk to their sales teams about the culture of the company so they better understand how to approach the organization, because they're not like everybody else. It's a different type of company. They've shifted the paradigm in retail. They've shifted it in manufacturing. They've shifted it in technology, in logistics. Walmart is not a product-driven company. It's a logistics and IT-driven company. It's a distribution-driven company, and that's unheard of in retailing. And so to understand how to sell to this organization, you've got to understand the differences that this company brings to market.
I understand you are a supplier of Sam's Club, too.
I'm really happy to know that my book that just came out recently was picked up by the buyers at Sam's Club and Walmart, and it's carried in stores across the United States.
Now, that must be pretty exciting. That wasn't your intent.
Well, you know, when I wrote the book, The 10 Rules of Sam Walton, I actually felt that it would be extremely helpful to other retailers, non-retailers, manufacturers and suppliers and others. But I also believe that it would be a nice touchstone book for the current associates of Walmart and Sam's Club. And the way I wrote the book was in such a way that I know it pulls the heartstrings of the current employees of the company. And so it's actually a real good touchstone for their own culture to make sure that they're maintaining the focus on the teachings of Sam Walton. And it means a lot to me to have Rob Walton's endorsement. And when I walk into a Sam's Club and I see my books on the shelf, it means a lot to me.
All right, one final thing. I'm looking back at my picture on my desk of the manufacturer in China crying, and it says, help me get my product into Walmart. You do a lot of motivational speaking. What one last parting words would you say to this man in China to give him the encouragement or any last advice to give him hope in succeeding in merchandising with the world's largest retail merchant?
I would say that you need to strive for excellence. Walmart is a company that is actively trying to win the Malcolm Baldrige Quality Award for their company. And the Malcolm Baldrige Award goes to manufacturers in the United States who are the pinnacle of quality. And Walmart will probably never win that because they're not a U.S. manufacturer. But the point is they're striving to those kinds of levels of quality in everything that they do. So what I would suggest to someone is strive for quality in everything that you do, in every transaction. And when you make a commitment to Walmart, deliver on it. And finally, just make sure you understand the Walmart customer as well as Walmart understands their own customer. Take the time to shop their stores, know their customers, and set a goal to meet or exceed the expectations of your ultimate customer as a supplier, which isn't Walmart, it's the customer at retail.
Okay, very good. Michael, thank you very much. This has been an incredible interview, and I think you've given me and the listeners a great insight into Walmart and Sam Walton, and hopefully this insight can be used and turned into an advantage for that manufacturer dreaming to get their product into Walmart. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That's the end of this interview with Michael. I hope this has been helpful. I hope it's given you lots of ideas and more confidence in getting your product into Walmart or any of the other mass merchandisers.